Welcome to another edition of Time for Forgiveness, the show that not only teaches you how to forgive, but also gives you compelling guests who share their stories on how they found the path to forgiveness. Now, please welcome your hosts. Here are Kelly and Bob Pascuzzi.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. We're here with a very special friend. You guys are in for a treat today. I'm very enthused for this conversation with our good friend, Sean Parr. So, Sean, welcome to Time for Forgiveness.
And I'm going to say it's about time. I feel so blessed to be sitting here with two of the most amazing individuals that walk this planet. I love you guys so much, and you know that. I'm already going to cry. My gosh.
Well, I say thank you. And I don't think that majority of our audience knows what a legend you are in country music and beyond.
So let's let them know right now.
Wow, I didn't know I was a legend.
We've got a very abbreviated bio for Sean. I'm going to read it to you right now. Sean Parr, nationally syndicated radio host. He's been the voice of all your favorite shows over the last 30 years, the American Music Awards, the Academy of Country Music Awards, and the Golden Globes. He's also an actor who loves to give back to charity. And again, please welcome Sean. Here we are, Sean Parr. So, Sean, I know you've been to Kansas City before.
Love it here.
You love being here. We love having you. You're here, as you said, you love to give back to charity. And so you're here, and just tell our audience why you're here and what it's going to be about and what it means to you.
Well, and you guys brought me to Kansas City my very first time for charity, for a wonderful event that we got a chance to do together. And then we did the world premiere of The Ravine, which was such an honor to be on the red carpet for you guys and be part of that whole project. And then to be on the radio here in Kansas City. What a golden opportunity that was. As a matter of fact, it was the same weekend, Bob, you and I were talking about the premiere of The Ravine, and I had a chance to go out to KU and visit our station in Lawrence and get a chance to meet everybody over there and get a little bit more saturated into the city and just find out about our community here in Kansas City. And that was such a treat for me. And being a nationally syndicated radio host, that's kind of what I wanted to do. I didn't want to sit in a studio in Nashville and, you know, have 80 stations across the country and not go visit. I mean, think about the opportunities that were provided. And I didn't know that nobody had ever done that before, which is why I think our show did so well. And I've been so blessed, guys, to do radio for almost 40 years. Yeah. And I am the Cinderella story in the radio industry. This was not supposed to be my path. It was not supposed to happen. And it's amazing how when we think we're going to go down one direction, somebody will make sure that you go down another direction. So
what was the path that you thought that you were supposed to go?
I thought I was going to be on the PGA Tour. Hmm. I loved golf so much as a kid growing up. I played all the time. I honed my skills. I worked with these two guys that were pros that took me under their wing. I got my handicap to a +5. I saved all my money. I worked at nightclub at night, and during the day we'd play golf every day, and it's my passion. And all of a sudden I got this opportunity to be on the radio working at a nightclub. The radio guys came in and said, "Hey, can you do this show on the radio?" And I'm like, "What show? It's just me having fun, you know, and playing the hits." And it was a country station, and I said, "Oh, my God, be on the radio?" So I would work till midnight, then I would go down the street, and the station was down there, and we had the same board, and I would work midnight to 6 for literally 3 weeks, and then the owner of the station called, and I thought, well, he said, "I want to see you in my office at 9 o'clock on Monday morning." I thought, well, that's it. That's my radio career. That was fun.
Woo! Yeah, it's
and
over.
I show up, and he goes, "Hey, we'd like you to do the morning show.
Wow.
We love what you're doing."
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, let's see. If I get off the air at out of the club at 2.
You get to Lynx by 3, right?
The radio show starts. And I just saw it as an opportunity and put my radio or my golf aside for a moment. And I was ready to go to Q school. I was like $800 away from the $3,500 entry fee to get to the first round of Q school in Palm Desert. And I said, you know, I'm going to put that aside for a moment and use golf as a tool And I just jumped into radio with both feet, and it was unbelievable. And it's a Cinderella story by the fact that my best friend invited me to play in a golf tournament at Santa Ana Country Club. And I'm like, I can't afford it. I'm making $5 an hour doing a morning show at a little radio station. I can't afford Santa Ana Country Club. It's for cystic fibrosis. And I said, well, oh, okay. But I still can't afford it. He goes, my company bought a team. Don't worry about it. We need a scratch player on our team. I'm like, oh, my God, I'd be honored. So I played, and we win the tournament. And he said, well, you're going to stay for dinner. Dinner? Okay. Oh, my gosh. And they gave you a bag of, you know, swag with shoes and a shirt, right, and here's all this great stuff. And I stayed for dinner, and I didn't know how to pronounce cystic fibrosis. I didn't know how to spell it. I didn't know what it was. But when I sat down at dinner and I heard the mother talking about her daughter with cystic fibrosis, I would have done anything for that mother to not have to deal with another minute of having to deal with her child who couldn't breathe. And I instantly found out what cystic fibrosis was all about and wanted to fight for CF. Hmm. So the auctioneer didn't show up that night. And they said, we're really sorry, but our auctioneer's not here. And I was like, I'll do it.
Destiny.
I've always wanted to try it.
This is how it started.
So I step in. Yeah. We had the most fun. I didn't know what I was doing, but we had more fun than anybody had ever. They said they raised more money that night than they had raised before. And it was just the most amazing feeling for me because I had so much fun. But then they said, hey, we have an event in a couple of weeks. We'd really like you to come with us. And so I started doing charity events for them. And I started hosting all of their stuff. And the Anaheim Angels had their Don Baylor golf tournament. And they wanted me to host that. And all of a sudden I was like, I could use golf as a tool, play in the celebrity tournaments. And I'll bet you Dick Clark Productions guys are on the board of the ACM golf tournament committee. If I get on that committee, I'm going to get discovered by those guys. So I did. And I drove to Hollywood once a week. And they said, well, we want you to play with our sponsors because you're a good golfer. Okay, I'm in. And so played in the tournament. We win the tournament. You see a theme building here.
Yes, I do.
But it was just, we had a great group of guys. We had more fun. And that, I think, is what it's all about. And Bob, you and I have played before. We just have a great time and, you know, entertain and fellowship. And that's what golf to me has always been about. The auctioneer doesn't show up at the dinner. And they had one guitar that was signed by everybody, all the celebrities that were there that day. And they said, I thought, and these are Dick Clark's producer and head of entertainment, head of talent, said, I thought they said start it at 1,000. What they said was, let's see if we can get 1,000. Right? So I go out there and I said, here's an opportunity, one of a kind guitar. Let's start it at $1,000. And they were like, what? What are you? And I look at their face, they're in shock. And hands are going up everywhere. $1,000 going to be $1,500. I got $1,500, $2,000, $2,500, $3,000 over here, $3,500 over there. I tell you what I'll do. I'll give you $500 if you go to $4,000. $4,000, the place is going nuts. And here's this guy. Now he's mad. And these two guys get in a bidding war. And he's throwing his napkin. $4,500. His wife is putting a bear hug on him. Stop, what are you doing? And the other guy's like, $5,000. So I jump up on a table.
You're hanging.
Now it's $5,500, $6,000, $6,500. Now the guy's wife won't let him move his arm. And I told the other guy, I said, I'll tell you what, if you go to $7,000, I'll put you on that stage when Willie Nelson comes out with all the stars to sing their last song. You'll be on a bar stool in the corner over there with your new guitar. He's like, 7,000 sold. And the place went nuts.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks later, I get this call. This is Bill Boyd's office calling for Sean Park. Can you hold, please? I'm like, yeah. And that's how it started with Dick Clark Productions. He called and he said, Sean, this is Bill Boyd. I want to hire your butt. I said, hire my butt? He said, yeah, we're doing a show on NBC called Hot Country Nights. We did a warm-up guy. I said, what's a warm-up guy? He said, don't worry about it. Listen, I'm going to pay you $500 a night. I need you two nights a week for 8 weeks. Can you do it? I'm like, heck yeah. I'm making $5 an hour. You're going to pay me $500 a night. So I drove up to NBC. I had no clue about what I was doing. And I give the guy my driver's license, hoping my car leaking oil is going to make it from Orange County, California. And he's like, oh, Mr. Parr, here's your parking place right over here. And I'm like, parking place? And I walk in. I don't see anybody. And we'd given away tickets on the radio. So I went out to the front where the audiences all hang out and started meeting everybody and taking pictures and saying hi. And I walk back in, and here's Gene Weed and Bill Boyd, the two guys from the ACMs, walking down the hall. Sean, let's go. Come on. And we open a stage door, and at the bottom of the stairs is the executive producer, the stage manager, and this guy named Dick Clark. And I can't believe I'm standing in his presence. And I walk up, and he goes, Sean, there you are. Dick Clark knows my name. I was freaking out because I didn't know what a warm-up guy was.
What do you want? Like, what am I doing?
Right?
Like,
what am I doing here? And so Dick's like, okay, so Sean, here's what we're going to do. Why don't you go out and do 10 minutes? And then I'll introduce you.
10 minutes of what?
Exactly. But I didn't say that. And he said, and then just, you know, introduce me, but don't make it a big deal. Here's what I want you to say. Ladies and gentlemen, America's oldest living teenager, will you please make welcome Dick Clark? And I'm like, great. He goes, okay, what's that station you work for? 94.3. Boom. You ready to go? I go, absolutely. I had no clue what I was going to do. And he's like, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome from 94.3 Kick FM, Sean Parr. Go out, 400 people, stand up. How you doing? Oh, my gosh, what a great night to be here. I fake it. I just figured.
You just went into a zone.
I knew who was going to be on the show that night. Yeah. I knew it was Alabama. I knew Reba, this new artist named Tim McGraw.
Right? Oh, my God.
So I'm having a ball, these high-fiving people running through the crowd. I brought this little kid up on stage, you know, and he, you ever been on stage? Come on with me. You're my new guy. He became my assistant for the night. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time. Please welcome America's oldest living teenager, Dick Clark. And Dick walks out and sits down. And standing ovation, and he's like, stop, stop, stop. We got a show to do. What are you doing? Sits down on the stage. Says, Sean, come here. Sit down right here. And he puts his arm on my shoulder, and I could feel it to this day. And he says, how about my guy Sean Parr here? And
wow.
Like, give me a round of applause. He goes, okay, here's what we're going to do. And Sean, you're going to take him on a tour. We're going to do this thing. We have the show. We're going to film it out of order. But then when you see it on NBC, it's going to be perfect. And you guys, we need a lot of energy. And I figured, I kind of got that I was the hype guy to keep everybody entertained. So I faked my way through the first night, but then I got it. And I just did what I thought I was supposed to do for 8 weeks. Right. And that's how I got started with Dick Clark Productions, my first time I ever met him. And at the end of 8 weeks, he goes, hey, what are you doing on Sunday? I said, nothing. He goes, you got a tuxedo? I said, absolutely. I didn't have a tuxedo. But I didn't tell him that. It's Dick Clark. I go rent a tuxedo. I said, why? He goes, we're doing a show over the Universal Amphitheater. I said, great. What's the show? It's the Academy of Country Music Awards.
Oh, my God.
And, well, we could, you know, ham and egg do our thing here that we're, you know, we're so good at. I go, no, Dick, I'm good. Thanks. What are you talking about? Get out of here, man. Come on. Yeah, well, I'll see you on Sunday. All right. See you Sunday. Show up at the back gate at Universal Studios. Give the guy my ID at the gate. Mr. Parr, there's your parking place. I'm like, here we go. And I walk in, and there's Dick Clark. Sean, you ready to go? I'm like, sure. What are we doing? He goes, well, go out and do like 10 minutes, you know, the routine. And then you introduce me and you and I will walk him through our first 3-hour episode of the Academy of Country Music Awards. Dick Clark introduces me and I walk out and every country artist in the world is staring at me. It's Reba, it's George, Merle Haggard. You name the artist, this new guy, Garth, what's his name?
You had no idea?
No clue.
Yeah.
And I, to be honest, was hoping I was wearing Depends because I was this close. But it was so magical. And the vice president, general manager of the number one country station in America was sitting in the audience. I brought the president of the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, who became my dear friend, and her assistant with me as my guests. They were sitting behind Norm Epstein, the vice president GM. He leans over when Dick Clark introduces me in KZLA territory. He says, so that's Sean Parr, because they can't beat us in the ratings in our little Orange County station. because they're the big LA station, but we're local, Orange County. And his friend leans over and says, you need to write this kid a check. And my friends hear that. Cystic fibrosis goes back to day one when I did that auction. And here she is sitting in the audience with me, or sitting in the audience for me, and here's this conversation. Happens to know Norm Epstein, the vice president, general manager, and says, you want to meet Sean Parr? We'll take you backstage after the show and we'll meet him. She comes back. Sean, here's Norm Epstein. I knew everything about this radio station. I knew everything about Norm Epstein. He was a member at Riviera. That's the greatest opportunity in the world. They were the sports station, the Lakers. And, I mean, they were my idol station. They were the biggest station in the world. And he said, hey. I said, how's Riviera? How's your golf game? And he said, we'll talk about that later. You're under contract with Kick FM. And I said, no, sir. And he said, here's my card. You call me tomorrow. And so I did. I went on the air that next morning and called him. And he said, how quick can you get to Burbank? And I said, well, I get off the air at 10. I can probably be there at 11:30. I'll see you then. Click. And I show up at Burbank, and it walks me into a studio, and we sit and talk for an hour and a half. Everything but radio. And he walks me down the hallway, and he goes, Bob Guerra, this is Sean Parr. He's your new afternoon drive guy. Make him an offer he can't refuse.
Wow.
And I, first of all, can't believe I'm in the radio. This is KCL, the big dog, country station. And I couldn't believe it. And Bob's like, well, you know, we'll have to start them at union scale, which I thought meant minimum wage. Don't care. I'm going to go work for KZLA. So we walk around. He shows me the studio. We walk back in the office. He goes, do you have any questions? Now, I didn't know you were supposed to have a manager or an agent or somebody do the deal for you. I'm sitting there all, you know, stone-faced because I'm in shock. I said, yes, sir. I said, what's union scale? And he takes a book out and he goes, well, let's take a look. Afternoon drive. You're going to have to join the union, SAG-AFTRA, blah, blah, blah. Well, don't forget, we're going to give you a bonus after 90 days because I was like playing. He thought I was playing hardball because I was shocked. I was stone-faced. He goes, that's 69.9. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. Right over my head.
$6.99 an hour.
I didn't know what that meant an hour. Right. So I'm like, great. He goes, well, don't forget, we're going to, you know, bump at 10 after 90 days and you'll have a bonus structure and we'll give you endorsements, you know, and you'll be fine. I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but I didn't say that. So I said, okay. He said, you got to go give your notice. And I said, yes, sir. Thank you. And I get up to shake his hand and I look down and I see $69,900. And I became a math genius at that point. Plus endorsements, plus a 10, plus this. I couldn't believe it. I was shaking.
What year was this, Sean?
This was 1991.
Okay.
And I said, Bob, I got to go. And I'll be back. I'll call you when my station fires me because you can't give your two-week notice. They won't let you stay on the air. Mine did. But I get the elevator thinking the doors are going to close and it's going to be soundproof. 8 floors down all the way to the bottom. Oh, my gosh. I'm working for KZLA, the greatest. Oh, yeah. Woo! Because I just went from making $5 an hour as a 23-year-old kid. I'm freaking out. So that's how it all started. And I went straight to Dick Clark's office and said, you're never going to believe what happened. And he said, I am so proud of you. Listen to me. We got you. You don't need an agent. You don't need a manager. You have any questions. You have a contract. Anybody says anything, we got you. You're in the family. Hmm. And Cinderella story?
Right.
I didn't mean to take so long telling
no,
this
story. No, I'm glad you did.
This is really good for our audience, too. I mean, it's important to have your story and your background. And
but you say a Cinderella story, which it does sound because it's just like overwhelming. How could all of those events happen? It's crazy. Like you had no idea that was happening. But you had said with the golf, you know, there's a theme here. But I think there's a theme with your life. You do things before you're ready. I just thought how many times someone would say, well, I'm not ready to go do that. Like, I don't know what even know what I'm doing, but you did it anyway. What do you attest that to?
I've never been afraid. I've always wanted to be in front of people since I was a kid. I was in elementary school. I'll never forget sitting in the back of the auditorium, and the high school children's theater would come over, and they'd always pick volunteers. And I would raise my hand in the back, and I never got picked. So I always wanted to be that. I always wanted to be somebody up front. And I knew I had this voice. And so as a 10-year-old, I was calling our Little League baseball games and loved it and took notes and did all this crazy stuff and never just said, now batting, Johnny Rodriguez, 27. It was just always, well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another great day for baseball. Let's welcome our first batter playing first base, leading things off here on a gorgeous day. We'll check weather here in a moment. This is Johnny Rodriguez. There goes my voice. I'm cracking. I'm so excited. So, but, I mean, it's just I've just never been afraid, and I've always wanted to try something new. Mm. And I think it's the adrenaline thing. I really don't know. Because now I like to be over-prepared. I think I do anyway. But I'm just – I've never been afraid. I don't know where that comes from.
Well, what I'm thinking is that you, when you think of trying something new, you've linked up that that's a good thing.
That, and putting that, yourself in the position.
Versus the other way around.
Yeah. I could say it was a fantasy that – if I get on the committee, Dick Clark's guys will discover me. But something put me in that position. Right. I told myself to do it. I did it. And it's been crazy. And the 40 years later almost, the imposter syndrome has popped up several times of they're going to discover me at some point that I don't know what I'm doing. the movies, the television, the amazing opportunities that I've been blessed with. Because right after the Academy of Country Music Awards, Gene Weed, the director, called and said, hey, Dick wants you to do the Globes. And I'm like, do the Globes? What does that mean? He's like, Dick wants you to be the voice of the Globes. I'm like, oh, okay. Tell me what to do because I don't know what to do here. And so I became the voice. I'd never been in a studio before, in a sound studio, in a professional Hollywood studio. The Globes is like live. It's 3 hours. You can't mess up. You have to know everybody's name, excepting the Golden Globe for timing is everything. The director's talking in your ear. It's three. You're freaking out. You need 12 bottles of water, and it's just amazing. It's the most, you know, from a kid from Norwalk, California, to the glitz and glamour of the red carpet and seeing all these stars was so overwhelming that I'm more grateful today than I ever have been, because I've always been grateful along the way. And today I just look at the opportunities and think, how blessed have I been my entire life? I've worked very, very hard. Once I saw the opportunity, I jumped through that door as fast and as hard as I could, and I over-deliver.
You do over-deliver, Sean. We found that out right away. I remember the first time we saw you in action. Was it Cynthia's Unstoppable Foundation out in L.A.? And Kelly and I are friends with Cynthia Kersey, the founder of that foundation. And we saw Sean walk out on the stage, and I was mesmerized.
That was the word I was going to say. I was mesmerized. Yeah. But it's also
– if you haven't seen Sean Parr, you need to see him live and in person because this does not do it justice.
But you
no,
really
seriously, you just
captivate
the audience.
Captivate the audience.
And Kelly and I were the co-chairs on a non-for-profit that was having their annual benefit auction coming up. And I remember leaning over to Kelly going, we have to get this guy for our thing. And we did. That's how we met you. And
that was probably never forgotten that phone call. Yeah. Out of the blue, my phone rings, and it's this guy from Kansas City.
Italian.
And it's my buddy Bob. And he's like, hey, and just, you know, you're Bob Pascuzzi. The way you're you're a light. Both of you are such great lights in my life. But I had no idea how involved you and how much, you know, family I would – we're in the same family now. Yeah. But how you and I would evolve into this incredible relationship. So it's been fun.
Been the best, buddy. Yeah, it's been great to see how your career has continued to progress. I know there's a lot that's happened from those early days to where we are right now. Do you want to share a little context about where you are today and what you see going forward and some of the challenges you've dealt with here recently?
You guys have been through a lot with me as well, because sitting down and talking to you after I got a chance to do syndicated. I did radio in Los Angeles for 25 years and then got a chance to do a syndicated radio show, which means we're going to be broadcast on stations across the country. And we came to Nashville, launched a radio show. We were on 150 stations. And after 7 years, I kind of knew that something was going on behind the scenes, that there was – I worked with a young co-host who was kind of seeing the limelight and kind of went her own direction and wanted to kind of push the, you know, the veteran out of the way, so to speak. And I kind of saw it happening, but I didn't really think about it. Because I was just so busy doing so many other things and taking care of our stations and doing stuff. But then when my contract didn't get re-signed because our company had actually saw an opportunity to pay her next to nothing, mm-hmm. and they were filing for Chapter 11 at the same time, that they just couldn't afford my contract. It just came down to money. It hurt a lot because I changed my whole life for 7 years to come to Nashville. And I felt like this young lady had basically took it upon herself to stab me in the back, for lack of a better term. I mean, and I think we've all been there where it's like somebody's going to take something from you.
Undermine you.
Undermine. Thank you. Yes. That's a better phrase. And I just was so angry and disgruntled, and I just felt like I had just been wronged. And I thought about that for a while, but I immediately, the next day after they didn't sign my contract, I went, great, thank you for the opportunity. It's been an amazing 7 years. And that's where you guys helped me a lot. And I immediately grabbed my wife. We flew to Los Angeles. We went to an imaging studio and did imaging for a new show called Sean Parr's Across the Country. And didn't even think about it. It was like so fast. But there was always that resentment towards this person. And she never saw – I worked with this girl for 7 years, never saw me out the door, never – nobody said, you know, we're nothing. It was just like I came in one day and then went, it's time to go. And yeah, I don't think anybody's going to really care if I leave now, so I'm out. But when we went to Los Angeles, we found this new opportunity, and I just put everything into that. And we launched in 2020 during a pandemic with no stations and just got through putting that show on the shelf 4 years later with 81 radio stations and Academy of Country Music Award nominations and a very successful show. But I always had this resentment towards this person. And I think a lot of us go through resentment or our lives with resentment towards certain people or feel like you were wronged. Right. And Bob, you and I have talked about this in the past a lot, and Kelly, you as well. How do you forgive somebody? How do you go about forgiveness? Mm-hmm. And after we started talking about time for forgiveness and the pillars of forgiveness and really letting things go, I put it to the test.
Right. No better way to find out.
Right. Yeah. This is so hard for me to say, but we were going to a concert, the last concert of 2023, and I had so much resentment for this girl, and I haven't talked to her. I just, every time I saw her face on my socials, I would just, you know, delete. I just felt like I was wronged and had nothing to do with me. It was all in my head. Mm-hmm. But after we had talked and we'd gone through everything that we had talked about on how to forgive and understanding forgiveness and what it means to forgive and the freedom you get from forgiving, I said, I'm going. I knew I would see her at this concert. And I can't wait for this to happen. And I thought I was prepared. And we were sitting at a table, and I was like ready. I walked in there.
Had you told your wife you were going to do this?
No.
Okay.
And I walked in, and I looked around, and I didn't see her. So then we got in a conversation at a table with a bunch of people, and, you know, we used to work with in the same building, and we're sitting there talking, and here it comes. Entourage. here she is, husband, her producer, all these people. And I wasn't expecting it happened when I wasn't expecting it. So I was like, oh. But I stood up and I hugged her and I said, I am so proud of you. You are killing it. Keep doing what you're doing. I would love to sit down and have coffee with you sometime. I let it go. I thought I let it go before I got there, but I let it go at that moment. I'm telling you, I swear to you, it's like this whole thing just left me, mm-hmm. like from my head to my feet, and I just watched it go. Mm. And it shocked her. And her husband, she had gotten married in the time.
Did she even know how to respond?
Didn't know how to respond.
Taken off guard completely.
Yes. And I hugged her husband. Oh, my God, so good. And Joe, my wife, got up and hugged her because she saw me hug her.
Right. She goes, John's hugging. I better hug her.
Right, right. And yeah. So it was just an amazing freeing moment. And
well, I'm sure you two were not the only ones that were aware of the situation as well. I'm sure there was probably people in the audience somehow around you that also knew what was going on, and what a testament to see you stand up and do that.
The people that we were with all were in the same building. We all worked on different shows together in that building, and they knew, and they were like, wow. And my wife even said, and my daughter was with us, and my daughter, don't mess with mom and dad, because, you know, she'll put that wall up. And she immediately went over and hugged her, and we talked about it on the way home. And we actually, we cried about it on the way home. I knew you guys were going to do this to me. Because it was such an amazing feeling. And it's like, how do I describe how amazing it was? I didn't have to forgive her, which I did. I had to forgive myself first, because I held all that animosity. It was amazing to let that go.
Felt so good. I think how powerful the image, because it is, I do believe it's an energy that we carry with us, and it's either for us or, you know, it's not moving us to where we want to go. But as you said, you kind of watched it leave. And that's really powerful, because it does leave when we let it go.
I guess the best analogy, I know this is going to sound really weird. You remember in Ghost when the little things go down the street when they're leaving?
Right.
I don't know. I can't think of another analogy.
That's the imagery, though.
The imagery was like, there it goes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know when you know, and you knew.
I knew. And
you thought you knew before, but you really, now you knew.
I immediately reached out to her. She went on a cruise. She was going on a cruise the next day. I mean, we talked for 15 minutes. And I think her whole team and everybody around us were all just like, wow, there was like a choir playing music or something. And it was one of those moments where I think everybody was just like, this is very unique and very amazing. So, and I think it goes to what we're going through today. If we all just take a minute. And what you think in your mind and what you constantly play in your mind for a long time becomes bigger and bigger, that it's not really true. It may not even be factual.
But it becomes real to you.
Exactly.
Whether it is, you know, whether it is real or not.
Whatever you're feeding energy to is going to grow and expand, right?
Exactly.
That's where your focus was. That was, yeah.
I heard we do not.
That's for sure.
We do not experience life. We experience the life we focus on. And so if that's what we're giving our focus to, and, you know, it's really important, I think, to say, I know it's not for the other person. It is for us. But then you have no idea the gift that you gave her as well, because who knows how she needed that in her own life and what she was able to possibly think about and maybe see a different perspective and then was able to let go in her own life. So it's a very powerful, I see this ripple effect.
Maybe pay that forward, right? Right. I mean, who does she need to forgive, or
right?
Or who does, maybe there's something with herself, but
and since then
that had to have a powerful effect on her.
with my daughter, with my wife at the same time. We talk about, you know, things and with different scenarios in our own life now with my wife's best friends going through so many things or, you know, some – it's interesting how many things all of a sudden just pop up and you're like, well, wait a minute. I think we all have something in our lives that's going on. And some people have, you know, family members are the worst. You know, I'm serious. My family is like, I sometimes I think it's like a Jerry Springer show on Turbo, you know, but everybody's got the same issues. I don't care how much money, it's not about money, it's not about fame or who you are or what you do. It's everybody deals with the same thing. No matter what, we're all in the same boat together, all of us. And I watch so many people go through these things where I just say, if you would only stop harboring that, you will be such in a better place. You'll understand that it's so free.
Yeah, you know, Sean, like Tony Robbins has a saying, like even when somebody's engaging in a negative behavior that they might even know is not serving them, but they continue, they persist in it because at some level they are perceiving some benefit out of that behavior. When you think about this time period where you were building this animosity and resentment towards her, what did you perceive was the benefit in that scenario? Can you think back to then?
Of when I was upset?
Yes.
Oh, it was a poison that was feeding a well. And just every time I would see, every time it would become, and it wasn't all the time, but every it would pop up quite a bit because we work in the same industry together. And so I would see her a lot. And to have to just kind of not deal with it or just kind of go in a different direction or it was hard because she was my family for 7 years. I worked with this girl every day and we went through a lot. And so I just felt like I had this cesspool of poison that was just feeding itself and getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it was like there was no end. And at some point you got to say, we got to take care of this because when things consume you, that's when the problems start. If you let things – and, Bob, you've walked me through so many scenarios in our friendship where we're just talking on the phone and I'll tell you something and you're like, you can't let that consume you. You got to take a look at that and then put it over here. Great. Okay. And you deal with it. Mm-hmm. And the way you face it, the way you deal with it, the way you forgive it, it means a lot. And it takes all that burden off of you because there's so many easy ways to get stressed, so many ways to, you know, feed your mind, you know, once you get on that Ferris wheel of...
I think there's so many easy ways to be offended today.
Oh, everybody. Yeah. Got to be careful what you write, what you say. It's amazing the way that how far we've come because of this thing we call social media. And some people think that that's an avenue to say whatever you want. And they hide behind that because they certainly wouldn't say to you or myself what they say sometimes on social media. And I think, wow, if we could just get rid of all that stuff and say, look, we got to get back to a conversation and get back to sitting down across from the table and talking things out. Because 90% of the time, and I may be wrong with that perception, but you can figure it out if you just talk it out and forgive one another, you know, with all this animosity and things that go wrong.
You had said earlier, you know, I had a lot of resentment. You said that word a couple times. And I think about that now today. Resentment to me is maybe when I look back and go, I'm resentful because I missed out on something. And so in that perspective, I'm curious, as you're looking back, do you feel that you really missed out on anything?
I do.
Do you feel it opened a new chapter for you?
It helped me understand that I have the power to forgive. And I started looking in other areas of my life of who I need to forgive. And I talked about family, and there are some members of my family that are, you know, the walls are up. And I think a lot of people can understand family because sometimes family hurts worse when they do something wrong. But from that incident, she got married, and I was not a part of that. I mean, and again, this is a young lady who I helped mold into this incredible radio personality, and she was like, we were family. It's like my daughter almost. I mean, she's certainly young enough to be my daughter, but it was almost like working with my friend, and I really loved to teach her, and she learned a lot, and I missed out on a lot of the things that she got to experience in over the last 4 years. So that's the only thing that I regret. The resentment that I have is that I allowed myself to get that caught up, that I missed out on all that. And maybe some other stuff that I don't know about.
But have you ever considered that maybe that was necessary to get you to the point to say, enough, I don't want to feel like this anymore, and now it's caused you to grow, break through, whatever you want to say, from that difficult time? And I'm curious, you know, who has it caused you to become because of it?
The fact that I feel like I can just sit down with anybody right now that I have, if anybody has anything going on with me or any members of my family, I've reached out to several members of my family, and like I said before, they're shocked. They're like, oh, hey, you know, it's like,
why are you saying this to me?
Yeah, what's going on? Right. What do we need to talk about? I said there's a lot. We're missing out on so much.
Yeah.
And the time is now for forgiveness.
Well, I think one of the important things, as you know, and we're learning this constantly, but we can't control what's going on out there. Like, we don't control other people, what they do, what they say, mm-hmm. but we do choose our response to it. And I think the meaning that we attach to what's happening is going to dictate how we're going to respond to it, right? So the meaning that – and we do choose the meaning, good, bad, indifferent, whatever.
Sure.
But if we're choosing something that, you know, is in a negative mindset, well, we're probably going to react in a negative mindset if we're choosing a meaning that's not, positive, let's say.
One of the things I've really learned how to do is to respond to things rather than to react to things. And there's a big difference. Mm-hmm. Taking that extra moment and thinking about something before I react and taking the time to respond, because, you know, somebody comes to you with an issue and they're just like, so you
right.
Take a minute, think about it. And give them a response instead of a reaction.
Yeah. And that's a really good point, Sean, because I think, you know, I have an issue or had an issue with that. It's something I still need to be aware of, obviously, every day. I think it's commonplace. But when we react, we're giving the person or the event, the situation, all the power. When we respond, we maintain the control.
Exactly.
And that's why that's so important. But
I love this. Yeah. I love that you're doing this. I love this format so much of forgiveness. This is a perfect podcast, a perfect show. Just the energy in here. When I sit down with you two, when anybody sits in here, and the stories that I've heard and watched and seen that you guys have told are so powerful and so incredible. And I really hope that if you take away one thing from our Time for Forgiveness show, is that you can find some strength. Mm. And just when you think, there's no way I'm forgiving this person, yes, you can. And look, whatever you got to do to get to that point, and don't think that we didn't pray on it, because we prayed on it a lot.
Yeah, and Sean, if somebody said to you that I like this idea of forgiveness, you know, I want to forgive, I just don't know how, what would be your advice to that person?
Pray for the strength. look at the big picture, and my kids will make fun of me every time we're together. They always say, "Gotta look at the big picture." And I tell them that, and I preach that since they were little. Before you tear all these walls down with this friendship you've made with this person or this family member, whoever it is, look at the big picture. Mm-hmm. And how can we fix this? And sometimes it's the ability to practice what you preach. We prayed a lot about it. I would say you got to look deep and how much is it going to really, how much time is it going to take and how much energy is it going to take to keep that negativity going or to keep that scenario going rather than letting it go and not having to use any energy the next time you see that person or when you're feeling like you're missing something on that person to bring it back in. And now look at the rewards that you get by forgiving that person and creating a new scenario.
Yeah. You know, I think the quality of our life is the quality of the habitual emotional state that we're in, the predominant emotional state. And if the predominant emotional state that we're in is angry, pissed off, and frustrated, well, then our life is angry, frustrated, and pissed off.
You're right.
So I think that's what you're saying.
Exactly.
But if we can move to gratitude, you know, you mentioned gratitude early, Sean, and gratitude is, to me, is the thing that will move you out of any negative situation because it's impossible to be grateful, be thinking about something you're grateful for, and at the same time be focused on something that isn't working. So when we can go to gratitude, and you've mentioned this, and I know you start every day, you're grateful. I mean, you exude that when I'm around you. Like, Sean is just, he's a unique individual. And just being around him every day puts you in a better state. Anytime we're around Sean, we love being around you, buddy. And, you know, we're going to take this show to the next level. We're doing it right now with people like Sean Parr. So we are so grateful to have you here today. And Kelly and I are excited about our future at Time for Forgiveness because everybody needs it at some level. And I think it all starts with ourselves.
I agree. 100%, and I'm so glad we had the opportunity to do this today. There are so many blessings around us, and sometimes we forget to look at those. They're right in front of us.
Absolutely.
And every day I tell my team, guess what we get to do today? Yeah. Whatever we want. What do you want to do today? When we were doing radio, guess what we get to do today? We get to talk to people and make them feel. You guys, this show makes people feel. Makes people think. And now we move forward to forgiveness. I'm so excited right now. I'm sorry. I'm all fired up. And I want to use the big voice. But I've been doing so many auctions lately. It's been so crazy coming off of a big radio week in Nashville. But thank you guys for letting me be a part of this and for your friendship and the love that I feel every time I'm with you.
Thank you, buddy. Love you too. All right, well, I think it would only do the show justice if you wrapped it up today for Time for Forgiveness, this episode.
Did I wrap it up?
Yeah, absolutely.
So is there like some kind of out cue?
You just go.
Ladies and gentlemen, live from Kansas City, this has been another incredible episode of Time for Forgiveness. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for being here. And I would ask you to subscribe to the show by clicking the box here. That allows us to grow the program, bring you more inspiring stories that can impact you in a positive way. And once again, thank you for your support of Time for Forgiveness.